I think what makes us better as human beings is the ability to draw parallels. Parallels have made me feel more grateful for every situation that I've been in, because my parallels many a times were with what it could be.
Welcome to the Curious Advantage podcast, an exploration of the idea of curiosity and its increasing importance for thriving in the digital age from the authors of The Curious Advantage.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of The Curious Advantage podcast. My name is Garrick Jones. I'm one of the co-authors of the book The Curious Advantage, and we're delighted to be joined by Hirsch Haladka. Hi, Hirsch.
Hi.
Welcome to the Curious Advantage podcast, Hirsch.
Thank you.
I've known you for many years, and so great to see you, but I'm really excited about your book. It's called X-Provement, Exponential Improvement Through Converging Parallels. It's been published by Penguin and Random House, and you published it in co-authorship with Raghunath Mashkar, who's very well respected. And I need to ask you the first and obvious question, which, what does X-Provement mean?
Thank you for having me, Garrick. It's an absolute pleasure. So we found the need of differentiating from improvement, because a lot of people we saw called improvements, innovation. And we said, how do we bring in a term that signifies improvement, but exponentially so? So, which is why we brought two words that are oxymorons together, which is exponential and improvement. And that's how we came up with the word X-Provement.
The contents of your book include how to make a footballer as efficient as a microprocessor, and what do a pizza box and cancer detection have in common? And then how is a voltmeter similar to a mind reader, or broken bones that fix disaster zones? I mean, it's fascinating. You got to tell me, this one, Spider-Man, Goats, and Hawk Couture, what's the link? You got to tell us. Well, I know we got to read the book, but what's the link?
So essentially, if you look at, again, the book's all about drawing parallels from things that are unrelated. So if you pick any of the chapters, they do try to do that a lot. So in that particular case, we looked at a possibility where there's a stem cell modification of the goat in order for its milk to produce a protein that actually can make webs that are as strong as spider silk. And it's being used in making clothing. So one of the biggest things that the book talks about is how one thing that curbs innovation or X-Provement is how human beings divide industries. And for X-Provement to happen, we believe that divide shouldn't exist. And you should be able to go cross-domain, which is what all the chapters focus on and the book, thereby the book.
You've got the spidey silk, I get. You've got haute couture.
Yeah.
Where's the goat's?
The goat's milk is what produces the protein.
It's a fantastic book. It's full of these stories. Tell me about dynamic tattoos, for example.
So basically, it started with, the origin of it, again, was thermochromic ink, which people started using for various purposes. One of the most common applications that came of it was rings that people wore that sort of detected mood. And so that went into various applications, including tattoos, where it was a tattoo that changed color and so on and so forth.
It's a fascinating book. And the thing I love about your work is that it's really grounded. It's very innovative. It's very thoughtful about amazing concepts, but it's really grounded in real work and real. And you've been working in innovation at your lab in Slow Motion for some years now. I first met you in London when you were here. And how did you get into innovation and incrementalism?
I mean, the first instance of innovation for me was when my grandmom used to do things to fix things that I broke, which is why if you see the book, I have dedicated the book to her as well. I remember the first time, you know, some toy of mine had broken, she actually got a part of a footwear that she had and used that to sort of put it together. And then I said, hey, that's a footwear and this is a toy. How did they come together? And that was a start point for me. I mean, I wouldn't be able to articulate it back then, obviously. But eventually now I know that's what I've been doing, which is drawing parallels with everything I've seen and what I'm seeing today.
I know that there are three main topics in this book, coming from the conversations we have. Can you just take us through those to provide a little bit more context?
Sure. So the first one is around delta, which is, so what we define as the delta in the book is, it's the delta between what is and what could be. So all of us, no matter what profession we are in, we're always trying to fill the delta. And that's one of the start points. Now, how and what, how big is your delta is only up to you to define, which is where it talks about the four different kinds of change, if I may call it, that we speak about, and how all the four are different from each other. There is behavioral economics, there's design thinking, there is innovation, and there's disruption. Now, how these function differently is, if I draw a graph, again, the graph's in the book, but if I draw a graph between operations of a company, the users, and the strategy of the company, innovation and disruption lie on the strategy side, which is far away from the users, versus design thinking and behavioral economics, closer to the users and closer to operations. So the reason and how we differentiate it between them is essentially the closer you draw your parallel from what your current theme of work is, you know, you, like the closest would be behavioral economics, and then there would be design thinking. Further away would be innovation, and the furthest would be disruption.
And that's about, those about the changes, how you put those on a contextual understanding of change. That's the deltas.
Yeah.
That's, and then what's next?
Yeah. So the other ones, like I told you, the to emphasize and the difference between improvement and improvement. So that becomes a major theme of the book. And the third and the most important one, which every chapter is trying to emphasize on, is getting rid of the industry divide and how you can look across industries.
And why is that valuable? Tell me.
Actually, one of the first times I formally practiced drawing parallels across industries was thanks to you, Gary. You know, before that, I may have done it, but I've never been able to formally figure out a way to do it. So all credit to you on that front and your game that you made me play.
Well, we had a fantastic game for doing design work all those years ago.
Yeah.
Do you have an example for the listeners about where you put this into practice?
Yeah, I mean, multiple places. Firstly, every day of our work has been doing this. Like, you know, one of our latest innovations, which we probably getting a global patent on, and the results look good, the search results look good. So at any airport, especially the crowded ones, if you go to, one of the biggest bottlenecks is the handbag X-ray machine, where your handbag gets scanned, because that's the slowest of the process. And, you know, it's also an indicator for airports when, you know, all those machines get clogged, it means they actually equated to time to expand airports. Now, we suddenly started looking at, I mean, and this was actually almost bordering improvement and improvement. But, you know, the closest parallel we could find is, you know, hey, when people fell short of land, what did they do? They went vertical.
Yes.
So we came up with the world's first stacking X-ray system, where we're able to stack X-ray machines one above the other and increase throughput by like a few fold. And the Delhi airport's going to be having it first. And that's one of our innovations. And, you know, it's a simple parallel between crowd and land deficit, which is already a battle won in the architecture or infrastructure space.
That makes so much sense. And it's something that's come out of architecture and now is right into the industrial design in the airport. You've got another one called, what's a bicycle pump doing in a Michelin star restaurant?
Yeah.
And then you say it's a new era of gastronomic innovation. Tell us a little more.
So I don't know if you've heard of the story, actually. You know how it's a story of El Bulli?
Yes.
So basically, you know how El Bulli has always brought in people from various industries together to sort of disrupt the food space or come up with something extremely new in the food space. I mean, it was a similar process to what any innovator goes through. But, you know, the first one's always the most difficult when you have to draw a parallel. One of the guys who was there was a bicycle mechanic, and he was given tomatoes to work with while he tried various things that he would do in a kitchen, which he was refusing to draw a parallel. They pushed him, and at some point in time, He was frustrated. He took the nozzle of a bicycle pump, shoved it in a tomato, and started blowing air into it. What he came up with was tomato froth, which today is used across like the best of restaurants in the world. But, you know, that was a start point for it.
That's amazing. I mean, I love El Bulli and I love Andrea and everything he did. I mean, I love the fact that he owns the restaurant for 6 months every year and then just did innovation. And then the documentation, the books are so beautiful. Photography and so
on. Yeah.
But I haven't heard the bicycle pump story before. That's amazing. That's really, really fascinating. We're talking to Hersh Halatka, the visionary founder of InstillMotion, a consultancy firm that partners with Fortune 500 companies from various fields to achieve X-provement, the convergence of ideas to solve unique business challenges. He's also the co-author of X-provement, Unleashing Innovation Across Industries, a guide on revitalizing outdated methods and driving manufacturing productivity through cross-industry disruption. Hersh, you go beyond design thinking. The idea that there is a realm beyond design thinking is something else. And for you, this, it seems, is what is X-provement and what is that space beyond design thinking to your mind?
I mean, you know, different problems need different solutions. And because there are problems that need design thinking as a solution, just that the approach is so very different in the two. So the start point of any design thinking project is, in general, user research and understanding the ecosystem that the problem exists in.
Yeah.
When you go ahead and go through a fairly strong set of research principles, you have also sort of built your mind in a way that and assume that the ecosystem exists and how do you build within it. But the moment you want to come up with an X-provement, the current ecosystem doesn't matter. You want to think beyond. So the first thing that happens differently is in the X-provement process, user research does not exist or ecosystem research does not exist. Because you're now looking at a new ecosystem or building a new ecosystem altogether.
My God, that's very interesting. So you're not inside, you're kind of creating a completely new ecosystem. That's amazing. And why is behavioral economics, because you talk about behavioral economics quite a lot, why is behavioral economics important to this?
So while you can disrupt, you can innovate, you can design, think, and come up with something, the last mile of it is going to be making sure it's acceptable to the users. You know, and that is where behavioral economics plays a very, very large role, saying you might move heaven and earth, but if the user doesn't want it, or, you know, you're not making it acceptable to the user or giving it in a format that's acceptable to the user, then it doesn't. Like, one of the most famous examples of this category is, I remember actually when I was in college, the first iPad was out. And in my head, I thought, hey, this is a so much larger space when compared to an iPhone, but it does exactly that. Why have they wasted so much space? But, you know, in my mind, it was a behavioral economics piece that where they thought, let us first make people accept that there exists a space between a mobile phone and a laptop, after which we can give them more. Because if they gave you everything at a go, the acceptability of that reduces because there is so much more of a learning curve.
It reminds me of a story from people who are doing medical design, trying to introduce new tools into the surgery.
Yeah.
So if you might have a surgeon who's spent their entire career working with a particular set of tools, trying to introduce a new tool into their practice is very, very difficult, even if the tool is improving. To do phenomenally, you know, things. So new tools, new practices have to be designed with the users in mind, as you suggest. But
yeah,
that behavioral economics as a framework, that makes a lot of sense to me.
So we were working with a pharmaceutical giant, and it's not just the doctors and surgeons, but also people within a company. So it is, I think, globally, one of the top pharmaceutical manufacturers. Now, what happened was they realized that they had a team spread across the globe, but and this is the senior most of the management. They call it the top 40 people of the company. Now, in terms of vision and understanding, they didn't have a shared space because they were all over the place. I mean, you know, globally. So they wanted us to help them come up with a space where they can have a shared mind space within those 40 people. Now, we did come up with the format. We did come up with everything possible. And I realized at some point that the behavioral economics piece is going to be a really large issue, because if you've gotten to that level of seniority in a company, you're obviously in your 50s, I'm guessing. Most of them were in their early or late 50s. Now, at that point of time, what happened was we realized also learning something new was a task, and because of which they would not do it at all. So we had to find ways around how the entire shared ecosystem can happen on a WhatsApp.
On a WhatsApp? Okay.
Yeah, on a WhatsApp messenger. Because that WhatsApp was acceptable completely, and they knew how to work with WhatsApp. So acceptability was really high.
Yes.
While we could do a whole different application for it and do a lot more, what was important is that would not be used for very long because, you know, there'd be resistance to learning new things.
I hear you.
And it worked brilliantly from the time we moved it to WhatsApp.
Yeah.
Just because of how comfortable they are with the tool.
Where does curiosity fit into all of this?
So in my mind, at least for me personally, the urge to draw parallels is curiosity, right? So for example, if I'm looking at something, I'm curious because I want to know what it relates to in my life so that I can relate more to it. And if there's no curiosity, parallels don't exist, in my opinion, at least and personally as well. So I think it's a very, very central piece of drawing parallels or extrovert.
Welcome to the Curious Advantage podcast. This series is about how individuals and organizations use the power of curiosity to drive success in their lives and business, especially in the context of our new digital reality. It brings to life the latest understandings of neuroscience, anthropology, art, science, history, business, and behaviorism about curiosity, and make these useful for everyone. My name is Garrick Jones, and I'm one of the co-authors of the book, The Curious Advantage. We're talking to Hersh Halatka, the author of the book, Exprovement, Exponential Improvements Through Converging Parallels. You've got a bonus chapter called The Banyan Tree Analysis. You've got to tell me, what's the Banyan Tree parallel all about?
So the entire process of drawing parallels is, for us, a parallel with how a banyan tree works. So if you look at a banyan tree, it is looking, once a banyan tree is grown to some extent, it starts to look for various points of interest and begins to drop roots at those points of interest, right? And mind you, all roots parallel to the bark, what got the tree here. And you know, as and when it grows, one of the roots or multiple of these roots start to find a source of water. And when they do, they begin to build strength and grow and grow and grow until a point where the root becomes the stem of the tree and the current stem begins to diminish. So this is, for me, a parallel for any company, right? So if you look at a company that's grown to a certain scale, it is looking for various points of interest. Like, for example, if you go back to the era of cassettes that we heard or LPs we heard music on, if they kept exploring and drawing parallels on what else can be a tool to hear music. Eventually, if they came up with, let's say, online form of listening to music, that today would have become, that's the root that would have become stronger than the stem, which started them off in the business.
And that's what gives them survival. I mean, it reminds me of pivoting. It's like the companies that were able to pivot in the pandemic were the ones who were fastest and were able to do it without too much trouble, although it was difficult for everybody. But the ones that were best at it were the ones that had already been exploring that pivot already. We've talked about it in the past, like ants send out pheromones and they send out other ants that are always finding new forms of food for the colony, so that if the main source of food wipes out, they can go down that route. And I hear the same metaphor in your banyan tree, that organizations need to be throwing out roots to find other sources of energy or nutrients. And then if the main, as you say, the main tree starts to wither, it can transform one of the roots into the new tree and keep the whole thing alive. So that's the secret of the banyan tree.
Yeah.
And then you teaching that into organizations and building it into your designs.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a very critical part of it. And to take it a step ahead, we keep saying that the further away the root or the parallel from the main bark, the higher the chance of disruption. In the banyan tree parallel, the further away the root, it finds a new source of water and not the same source that the trunk is using.
Yes.
Right? So that's the higher chance of disruption. So
yes.
The distance from of the parallel from the bark is what determines how disruptive the change is going to be.
So the further the root away is from the actual main tree,
yeah,
the bigger the change is going to be in some way.
Yeah, because a new source of water or nutrient that's going to find and not the same one.
And this is why banyan trees live hundreds of years. You've got a question about focusing, shifting and things and lessons from football clubs, which, of course, is very popular here. And you say, how do misers decide where they will and won't spend their money? And how can footballers spend their energy the way misers spend their money? What's the answer here?
there's no answer. But then essentially, it's the approach and the thought process of conserving energy. And if you're able to draw that parallel of a miser into your energy, you conserve energy to perform better. Which is why that chapter draws, you know, in the one space which is most miserly about energy, if you look at it, is microchips, right? I mean, to make a microchip perform higher, and you want a lower surface, it conserves energy to the highest possible way of doing things. And so what can we learn from there in order for a footballer to conserve energy and use it more efficiently? So that's essentially... The parallel of a miser was just
because a miser is really only doing what they have to. They're saving as much energy money as possible.
Yeah.
Also, two fascinating things about this chapter. You've got these illustrations about the X-provements and the improvements.
Yeah.
But you talk about diversity. Can you tell us a little bit more about diversity and its role in X-provements? And you call it the banyan tree in action.
Yeah. So... Again, diversity is about exactly what we were just talking about, which is essentially how far away can the parallel be? The further the parallel, the chances of disruption are higher. So for it to be further away from the tree, you'll have to look into really diverse industries. You know, like the book explores into things that are completely unconnected, and that's the attempt.
So you go further out. You go more diverse as possible to build up those resources from which you can get ideas. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
And the banyan tree, I mean, you've got the key takeaways on page 218, which I'm not going to read here, but I really encourage people to buy this book, Exponential Improvement Through Converging at Parallels. If they're interested in, you know, protecting their organizations, making sure that they can pivot and also coming up with innovations that actually take into account the behavioral economics and other processes, as well as learning from as many, many different parallel industries, bringing new ideas from outside. It's the ultimate idea of open innovation, but it's extremely practical and it's full of stories about where it's been put into practice. Let's talk about you. Hirsch, what are you personally most curious about right now?
So the subject I'm exploring is negative space and time. So what I mean by that is, what do movie theaters do at 6 a.m.? So that's the negative space and time. So can they become, you know, some sort of classroom at 6 a.m.? Or do, you know, so basically spaces that are not explored at a particular point in time. Like just another one we had, because we've done some work with the airports, we realized that 70% of the cabs that leave the airport don't have a full trunk of luggage. So negative space and time is something I'm exploring right now, and I'm quite curious about it to where it heads. And if not it heads into a book is something I don't know today, but that's a subject I'm exploring.
If there's one thing to leave our listeners with, what would it be?
I'd say draw parallels. Like, no matter what, you use them, you don't use them. I think what makes us better as human beings is the ability to draw parallels. And it is not necessarily to come up with business innovation, but also in our personal lives. You know, parallels, personally for me, parallels have made me feel more grateful for every situation that I've been in, because my parallels many a times were with what it could be or how, you know, and so I'm just grateful for everything that's happened to me and so happier in that sense. So I would say personally, professionally, it doesn't matter, but draw parallels. It's the best thing that happened to me and I hope it happens to everybody.
Thank you, Harsh. It's fantastic chatting to you and congratulations again on the book. It's fascinating. For our listeners, if you're interested in whether outdated or failed solutions in one industry can bring disruption to another, or whether a racing team can improve industrial manufacturing productivity, or whether science fiction can offer entrepreneurs valuable lessons in innovative thinking, get this book, Experiment, Exponential Improvement Through Converging Parallels, by my friend Hersh Aladka and Raghunath Mashalkar. Yeah, I've got to read you two quotes from the back from Mukesh Ambani, who's the chairman of Reliance Industries. This new Aladka Mashalkar book gives a fascinating new path to achieving disruptive, game-changing innovation. I would agree with that. And Narayana Murthy, who's the founder of Infosys, a powerful new paradigm for innovation-led exponential growth. And these are fantastic recommendations from incredibly powerful people. And congratulations, Hersh. That's just brilliant. You've been listening to a Curious Advantage podcast. We're curious to hear from you. If you think there was something useful or valuable from this conversation, we encourage you to write a review for the podcast on your preferred channel, saying why this was so and what have you learned from it. We also appreciate hearing our listeners' thoughts and having a curious conversation. Join today at hashtag Curious Advantage. The Curious Advantage book is available on Amazon worldwide and at bookstores near you. Order your physical, digital, or audiobook right now to further explore the 7 C's model for being more curious. Subscribe today and keep exploring curiosity. See you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Curious Advantage podcast. The Curious Advantage book is now available to purchase on Amazon. Stay tuned for the next episode and keep exploring curiously. This podcast is produced by Aliki Palinelli and John McGinty and edited by Jill Damatak-Futter.